It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much again for tuning in this morning. We have an incredible guest on coming on in a minute or two, Chris Mazzarella, right here from Parsippany, New Jersey. I wanted to dedicate the show once again to the incredible, heroic folks down there at the hospitals, the first responders, the essential workers. Without them, I don't know where we'd be, but Lord knows we need them right now. So God bless those and their families. Chris, are you with us this morning?
Yes, Todd. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for waking up and joining us. You know, it's going to be a great show, and I was really humbled when I started to learn more about who you are and where you came from. So it's a great honor to have you on this morning. First, Chris, I ask everyone, how are you and the family, the kids doing?
Doing well. You know, quite honestly, it's tough for the kids to understand. My son, Dylan, he's 11, and my daughter, Ava's 8, and it's tough for them to understand why, you know, we're inside every day and, you know, we're not seeing our friends and things of that nature. It kind of gets them down at times, but they have sports and cheerleading to kind of, I guess, keep them going a little bit when they're down a bit. But it's not an easy situation for the kids especially.
Yeah, I can totally sympathize on our street. We have great neighbors, and, you know, it's strange for the boys. I'm blessed with two young boys, and they see our neighbors, and it's just a bit of the twilight zone for everyone since we're so used to just people hanging out and riding their bikes together, their scooters. And it's certainly a challenge, but I certainly think we're all getting closer and closer as family, so we always look for the silver lining in it. You know, we're really just going through a difficult time. I know Governor Murphy and everybody in our great state's doing their best to pull together, and we're certainly getting through it, but it's certainly a challenge on a number of levels. So, Chris, you know, each week when I bring someone on, and the show really is about great folks like you who give back to the community and lift others in need, and we certainly need that right about now, to say the least, I like to ask a little bit about your background, not to pry or feel like I'm being invasive, but I think it's helpful to learn a little bit more about yourself. Where are you from originally, Chris?
I originally grew up in Union, down in Union County, went to Union High School.
Yeah, you know, I brag on, I grew up in Springfield, so we're literally neighbors. I grew up in Union County,
yeah.
And I graduated in 81, so I got you by a few years. But when I read about you coming from Union, I thought, wait a minute, now that's roots for me, too, since I love New Jersey and Union County especially, though I love Morris County, spent my home for over 25 years. When I heard Union, I said, wow. That's like my backyard. So you grew up in Union, is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Grew up in Union, graduated in 92 from Union High. Moved up towards Morris County, I guess, when I met my wife. We moved, after getting married, we moved up to Parsippany, Morris Plains side for originally. Then we moved across town to the other side of town over by the high school in Parsippany here.
Right, Parsippany is a great local town as well. What about your upbringing, Chris? Not to pry too much, but what was your upbringing like? Because I always like to find out, you know, how people are shaped as they go through life. It kind of helps us understand kind of where they ended up in life, because you never know where you start. I always like to think it's important to kind of know your journey. So what was your upbringing like?
Well, I had the normal beginning, obviously. Lived in Union, like I said. Went to Washington School with my mom. Unfortunately, my dad left when I was about 6 or 7. Times got tough. Mom did everything she could to keep us together. I had an older sister, Jamie, and we, you know, mom scraped and scratched to keep us together, keep us over a roof over our heads. Unfortunately, when I was about 4th grade, I guess, we lost the house. My father had not paid for it at that point, and mom was more worried about feeding us, you know, and keeping us going than, you know, doing the best she could. So we went through plenty of times with, you know, no heat, no electricity, barely any food. So I kind of got that understanding early on what it was to struggle, how difficult it was. But I had a sister who gave up so much of her time, you know, to make sure I was okay while my mother was working. So when we left the house there after getting kind of kicked out there, we went over to an apartment on the other side of town, so I stayed in Union. And just grew there in a different school. It was tough, you know, change of schools and when I was in fourth grade, finish it out. But I got to say, Union was a great town. It was a big town for the most part size-wise, but it felt like a hometown. It really felt like, you know, a place where you, you know, you knew everybody kind of without knowing everybody. And we went from there. So Mom did everything she could to keep us safe, happy. You know, it was a struggle. I was very close to my mother. Unfortunately, in 2009, we lost her to pancreatic cancer. Definitely a very difficult time as I was very close to her. My son was about 6 months old at the time and kind of, you know, everything was a whirlwind at that point. But if anything, I can say I can look back. I was lucky enough to get through. With great family that I had, loving family, and my mother really taught me what it was like to give everything you have, in everything you do. And she gave everything she had, and you know, I think at the end of the day I look back and a lot of her health stuff probably was caused by stress and obviously not being a doctor or anything like that, but a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, you know, put herself through a lot, working lots of hours, and you know, could have been a different story, but I wouldn't change it for the world. I have a great sister. You know, we may not talk every day, but she did everything she could to make sure I was safe. And it was always the focus of my mother and my sister to say, hey, is Chris okay? And you know, I'd never change a thing. It taught me that no matter what you do in life, you can get through anything if you just try to stay positive and you just work hard.
Amen to that, Chris. And, you know, that is a story that, sadly, a lot of people go through adversity in life. It certainly shapes and makes you who you are. But God bless your late mom and your incredible sister for, you know, being there and showing the value of family. I'm so sorry, you know, about the loss to pancreatic cancer as well. I lost my dad, ironically, in 2009, January 31st, actually, to pancreatic cancer. And, I miss him every day, and I lost my mom also about 6 years ago. And I was blessed. I mean, you know, my parents were there all the time for me, and you know, I do my best to make them proud. But I'm sure your late mom is with you in spirit at all times too, Chris. So, you know, everything we do in life, we always try to do our best and honor our parents. So I'm sure they're, you know, your mom would be very proud of how you turned out. In terms of kind of what you do for a living, what kind of work do you do, Chris?
Well, I'm in the retail business. I work for Stop Shop supermarkets in retail. Obviously, we're right there every day in the stores and see, you know, see how much life has changed, to be honest with you. It's not, I don't want to say alarming, but it's a big difference seeing everybody walking around with a mask on and you're normally standing there talking to customers and associates together, and it's just a different world right now, and it's tough. I've been in retail since I was in high school, basically. I was a produce manager for A&P. I went different route. I became a field specialist for produce and floral and moved over to ShopRite a few years later. I was with A&P for almost 20 years. ShopRite, I spent a few years with doing the same thing, district manager and things of that nature. And I kind of was driving a lot, and the kids were younger. And I made the move to Stop and Shop where I am now. You know, a little bit closer to home, and a good, great company to work for, and they've been so supportive through everything we've been doing. So it gives me a little time with the kids because I'm closer to home than I was before. But now, you know, I have the ability and, you know, the flexibility of a company supporting me that really understands, you know, my personal goals, you know, work-life balance, as we all try to get.
Oh, no question about it. I have to say, we have an incredible engineer, Mary Kay, who does really a great job here at the WMTR. And before I start every show, I always say hi, obviously. I like her a lot. She's a very nice woman. And she also works in the supermarket. And I always ask, you know, especially lately, how you doing, you know? And she's exhausted. And you know, sometimes people are just really rude. Luckily, she's said lately, I guess they're starting to get the message, you know, to be a little bit more polite and kind to her and to everyone in the supermarket setting. And those folks in supermarket setting, they truly are essential workers. I mean, everybody's got to eat. They got to get their food. And it's interesting, you know, when I was thinking about getting ready for the show and I knew the industry you're in and to get your perspective because, you know, supermarkets, you know, it's a neighborhood feel. You go in, you usually know your deli clerk or whoever's there in produce or whatever, and the cashiers, and now it's you go in and everybody's got their mask on, their gloves, and you got to keep the social distancing, all rightfully so, of course, but I'm sure it's a strange scenario, surreal for you guys, right?
Oh, like I said, it's a completely different world, and being a field associate, I'm in different stores, so I have been in Bergen County. I've been in the different counties and different areas where it's hit harder than some, you know, in Sparta where it may not be as prevalent right now, but it's still the same social distancing, same issues going on. Everybody's got to follow by the rules. And yeah, for the most part, honestly, folks have been great. The customers have been wonderful, treating the employees with respect. And you know, I have the ability, like I said, going to different stores that I may not be directly on the front line for 10 hours a day, but you know, we have the cashiers and the store managers and all the people that work in all the different departments. They are out there constantly, you know, serving the customers, doing everything they can, trying to stay upbeat. And yes, there's always the occasional person that's rude, and that's going to happen whether it's, you know, a perfect scenario or a non-perfect scenario. But, quite honestly, the customers have been amazing. And it's just been a little easier dealing with the whole situation, I would say, because of the spirits of most of the people that come into the stores.
Yeah, I mean, I always, you know, just give mad shout outs for the essential workers because, you know, that's an important part of our society, our fabric of our society. And also, I never take for granted the families that are impacted, you know, the healthcare workers, the first responders, the folks working in the supermarkets, the warehouse, all the people that are doing the deliveries. They're coming in contact with the public, and I'm sure families, I'm sure your wife, you know, probably has some concerns as well. Am I right in that regard?
Yeah, you know, so I think as with most, you know, hospital workers and essential workers, as we call ourselves, or everybody now, you know, you walk in the house and your first thought is, I got to take my clothes off. I've been out in public all day. Let me get undressed in the laundry room and, you know, before and still try to do it. But the kids would run in, you know, my daughter, first thing out of her mouth, Daddy, you're home, and, you know, run and try to give you a hug. It feels a little different. You kind of, you don't want to avoid that hug because it makes you feel good. But you also think to yourself, I've been outside all day and, you know, we're not 100% positive how this is all transmitted and passed along. So you worry about it a little bit, you know, and then, part of the reason we started what we're doing now is for me to, in my mind, not be in the house as much because I'm afraid to, you know, pass it along to the family. It was the last thing I would want to do would have them affected by outside forces because they've been, you know, they've been following the rules, staying inside, social distancing, and I don't want to bring it home to them. So sometimes when I come home and I go back out to make a delivery or work with the fellas on something else, I kind of, that's in my mind. But, all right, I'm away from home a little bit longer. I'll, they'll be safer. You know, when I get home every day, the first thing out of my kid's mouth is, Daddy, do you have a delivery tonight? Are you going somewhere? And, you know, it's hard to say, yeah, I do, because you see on their face that they want to see you and spend some time with you. But in the back of my mind, it's keeping them a little bit safer, I guess. Maybe that just makes me feel better about the situation and keeping them safe.
You know, Chris, you said something that also really struck home with me, really resonated. I run a local law firm, and my team is pretty much working remotely. Unless there's some critical deadline, I'm pretty much in the building all by myself. I come home from work, and the little guys come running up. I have to back up too and say, listen, I can't give you a hug right now. Even though I was alone in the building, I'm still very, you know, precautious about, perhaps, God forbid, you know, if I had something passing on to the kids. But, I know as a father or mother or whoever is listening, nothing's better, nothing's sweeter than you come home from toiling at work and then boom, you're home and the kids want to give you a hug. I mean, I really love those, and, God willing, we'll get back to some normal normalcy with that as well. So what I want to do, Chris, is talk about your charity, your philanthropic endeavors, your volunteerism, because that's really what the show is about, is anybody can give back. You don't have to be a billionaire. You don't have to be extremely wealthy. In fact, money has nothing to do with it. It's from what's in your heart and what keeps you going and what's your humanity. And I've met so many people in my life where they had so much money and they were rotten inside. I met people didn't have two nickels to rub together, the most generous, sweetest, kindest people that walk this earth. So I wanted to talk with you about your volunteerism. When did you first start to give back and to understand how important it was to be a giver, not just a taker?
So with all the companies I work for, being in the, you know, in the industry, the companies try to be out and helping the community. And as I grew up in the business, I kind of, you know, partook in, you know, food drives or food pantry, working in a food pantry, helping packing bags or collecting donations, or, you know, we would go and sponsor, an honor flight at one of my prior companies. And you would just see, you see how you were helping people, the smiles that just handing them a bottle of water would give them, or you were helping somebody that needed something, whether it was big or small. You're just part of something that made you feel good. And it wasn't about, at the end of the day, you know, is somebody going to know Chris Mazzarella did this or didn't do this? It was about, there's going to be people that feel better about themselves or feel good, about what we've done for them, or that they have somebody to look to. If they need something. I think one of my, I guess the first time I realized that it was making an impact was when my mom passed. And I always told her that I want to make a difference. I always felt inside that I want to make a difference somehow to people. You know, whether it's a big difference, small difference, something that I could say I was part of that made a difference for people when they needed it, not just for the sake of doing it. It's when somebody needed it, we were there for them. So when my mom passed, I was still working for ShopRite at the time, and there were some really good people there, and they allowed us to raise money in the stores for pancreatic cancer, the Lust Garden Foundation. And I was able to walk in a pancreatic cancer walk in Rockland County, New York, Orange County, New York, sorry. And we raised $30,000 for pancreatic cancer research. And I got to do the walk, and I was able to stand on top of the dugout. We were at Renegade Stadium, a minor league stadium up in New York, and got to stand on top of the dugout with everybody that was at the walk, and I got to speak about my mom. And I'm an emotional guy, so sometimes I got to recover myself, but I got to speak about my mom, and I saw this look on everybody's faces when I was speaking about the same disease struck them and put them in that building we were in that day or on that field, and kind of, it hit home really, really big, and it felt great to be able to speak about my mom to so many people, and also that they understood what we all went through. So from that point on, I said to myself, I want to keep trying. You know, I wasn't, honestly, we weren't big into, you know, tons of charities or raising funds, I should say. But we just, that was the day that it struck me. That's what got me going. And you know, it's been years now since that, you know, thanks for the grace of God, we haven't had this situation that we're in until now, 11 years later. And I had some good people around me when I got this thing started, and it's taken off. Right. So that's where that started.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, I lost my dad, who was my hero, to pancreatic cancer in 09 as well. And I was so privileged and blessed to stand up in front of the Union County Bar Association in Union County in Elizabeth. And then right here in Morristown at the Morris County Courthouse, they had given plaques out both in Union County and Morris County plaques for folks that had lost their lives in the legal community. And I was just so honored to talk about my dad and what he stood for. And like I said, to this very day, like you honor your late mom's memory, I do the best for my dad, Alvin. We also as a family created the Alvin R. Leonard Foundation, raised a lot of money. We similarly donated to the Lust Garden Foundation. But I hear you, you know, Chris, when you talk about that and how honored you were, because I remember like it was yesterday how honored I was. And and still I'm honored to, you know, to call my my dad my father, since Lord knows how that really shapes your life, and you had an incredible mother. So you mentioned this recent movement you were involved in, and that's really what I want to focus on today, is that incredible fund you created and what that's by. What is that called, Chris?
Well, the GoFundMe is Feed the Frontline. Our website is frontlinemorris.com. It started with a Facebook page, quite honestly, if I can tell you the story about it, tell everybody the story about it. It was a Facebook page for our town. It's Parsippany Supporting Our Town is the Facebook page. And, Friday night when this all first got started, I kind of was laying in bed, honestly, and I'm thinking to myself, like, how can we help? What can we do? And, I created a page. I figured, let's get, you know, whatever businesses were open. It happened to be at the time it was just restaurants, and for the most part still is, trying to connect the town residents with the businesses that were open, to give them an option and keep the businesses going, I guess, was my thought, original thought, with, you know, order and take out, or if somebody needed an odd job that was, at that point, was still able to be done. We had a spot where the residents and the businesses could kind of intermix, advertise and look for something that they could work together on. And again, it was basically ordering takeout food for the beginning of it. You know, this restaurant's open, they have this special, and trying to kind of keep that open. So that was a Friday night. I woke up Saturday morning and it was, you know, there was 50 or 60 people, and a buddy of mine, I'm a president of the Little League here in town, and a buddy of mine from the Little League sent me a message joking, hey, look, you got 100 people. And this was Saturday afternoon. And it rolled on through Saturday. It was like, hey, we got 300 people. Then we had 500 people. Like, wow, this is great, you know. We were joking back and forth. His name is Rich Leitner. We were joking back and forth, and oh, are we going to get to 500? Are we going to get to 1,000? And then Sunday afternoon, we're at like 1,200 people. And my next-door neighbor, who's been a huge, huge piece of this and a great person all around, Ted Stanziale, calls me up on Sunday, I guess around 5 o'clock. He goes, hey, you know, we should really start a GoFundMe. We should look at it. I said, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Let's, you know, what do we do? He goes, start a fund me. We'll name it this and we'll go from there. We'll try to get donations. We'll try to, you know, buy food, buy meals for the frontline workers, and we'll use local businesses. So we're helping on both sides. So Ted Stanziale who's my neighbor. He got in touch with his cousin, Nick Krause, who also runs a marketing, company in Morristown, Krause Marketing. And he called me and we got a three-way phone call going, and we just, you know, bouncing ideas. And he goes, well, I'll work on a website. We'll get it up and running. You can donate. You can request a meal. You can volunteer. We'll have that on there, and, you know, later on that night, another fella got patched in, Rob Zweigart, he got patched in. He's a Morris County guy, and he jumped in and said, let's do this. Let's see what we can do. Let's help as many as we can. And then Rob's friends, and we're all friends with Tom Mitrangelo, who's also, he's a Morris County freeholder, and he helped with some of the from the beginning. He jumped in and just started, the ball started rolling. So Ted tells me, set the goal for $50,000. And I said, Ted, are you crazy? How are we going to get $50,000? That's not going to happen. I mean, let's be reasonable. And he says, no, do it. You know, what's the worst that we can do? We don't make it. And, you know, but the best we can do is we make it. And sure enough, you know, it started there. And that's where it all began. And I know the story's a little jumbled because there's so many things going on and so many things have spun off of this. It's been a whirlwind. It's been a little over a month, and it's really something to behold, to be quite honest with you.
Well, it's an incredible thing. You know, that's why I was so honored to have you on, in terms of what you're doing to help the local community, the heroes, and also support the local businesses. For the listeners and that want to donate or want to reach out, how would they reach out to you, your great movement?
So the website, like I said, is frontlinemorris.com. On that site, you can request a meal for a family member, a friend who's working in a hospital, or an officer, or an EMT, whatever the essential work they're doing. We've actually kind of, you know, the goal was first responders and frontline workers, but, you know, it's tough time for a lot of people. We've We've actually been able to, we fed some of the kids at a local orphanage, Jersey Battered Women's Shelter. We brought them Easter dinner, and we made Easter baskets for their kids. So they, you know, they had a little bit better of an Easter, got to celebrate a little bit, and, you know, there's been homeless solutions we've worked with. You know, we've kind of spread out a little bit, but we're getting food to people who need it. And then with the amount of money that's come in, we've been given that ability. So, like I said, the website is frontlinemorris.com, and the GoFundMe page is Feed the Frontline. Everything can be reached from the website. It's, or if you're a local from Parsippany, we've got the Facebook groups of Parsippany supporting our town. There's 4,300 members at this time, and I'm going to be honest with you, 4,300 people in a group on Facebook could probably go sideways real easy, but it's been a positive, absolutely positive page, positive group of just a community coming together and just proving that in a tough time, a big town like Parsippany can feel like a close-knit group without being together, quote-unquote, with social distancing. It's been an honor for me to be a part of it.
Well, it's an incredible thing that you and your neighbors and friends got together and really are making a big difference. You know, a lot of people knock Facebook and social media, but at times like this, there's some wonderful things that do come out of it. And this is a prime example of people making a big difference to help others in need. And I don't know what's more important right now, but to lend a hand up and help others. I mean, it sounds like you certainly have exceeded your goals, and that's a beautiful thing, but you got a lot more work in front of you. You know, that's really what it's all about. I was fortunate to have Melissa Spiata on, who was involved with the Flag of Morristown, and Shannon Steets, Feed the Frontline NJ, and all these wonderful organizations just popping up right here in our backyard to say God bless the first responders, and let's really support them, and really also keep the local businesses afloat, because, you know, that's really important as well. I think that's really what it's all about. So in terms of you getting your friends together and setting a goal, and life is about goals too, Chris. I mean, everybody, if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it. I really believe that. So you set a big goal, and guess what? Bam, you've already exceeded it. Have you revised your goal? I know you had that crazy goal of 50,000. You passed it in less than a month. Do you have a new goal?
Yeah, actually, Ted and I talked again, and Ted goes, let's raise it to 75,000. I mean, right now we're at 55. I think we might have just went over 56 this morning, as a matter of fact. And, yeah, we raised it to 75,000, and, you know, in a time like this, you hope everybody understands the reason for raising it is not to be greedy. The reason for raising it is because if we can get to that goal, there's that many more meals we can get out. You know, we've served 2,700 meals. We've had over 100 deliveries. Like I said, the Facebook page, a couple of the core group, Rich Leitner, who I mentioned earlier, started a food drive on Thursdays with the local PAL and Sam Yodice, and for the last 5 weeks, you know, they filled the van. It was always fill the van, and they filled the van in the first 4 weeks of this food drive. This last Thursday, we decided we're going to fill a truck. So the town Parks and Forestry allowed us to use one of their box trucks, and we challenged our town to fill a box truck with donations of food for our food pantry in town because they were depleted. So in, 5 hours, our town stepped up and filled the truck from front to back. It was an amazing sight. We do have pictures on the Facebook page if anybody wants to check it out. But we had another person hop in. In the time like this, you need as many people hop in as you can. Ann Burdetta jumped right in and was challenging everybody on Facebook. I'll pick up your food. If you can't make it, if you're scared, I'll come get the food from your porch. Leave it there. Send me a message, and I will get the food and bring it to this truck. And we filled the truck. So, yeah, we raised that goal to 75,000. But we've had a goal of doing as many things as possible to help in other ways, and it's been amazing. We have a sign initiative that Rich and I decided to go with, Parsippany supporting our town signs, and last weekend was our first delivery. We had everybody order it, pay through Venmo or send a check, and we decided we're just going to go place them instead of having everybody have to get together. We set up routes. We've had volunteers, you know, a friend of mine, John Hiltz, and another friend, Jeff Levine, and Rich's family, all jumped in and making deliveries of signs. So the first weekend, we had 250 signs. We said, oh, that was great. You know, we raised that couple extra dollars. and we're going to buy personal protective equipment for our local first responders in town, obviously.
Yeah, Chris, I'm sorry, Chris and Pierre Mitch, we're just going to take a quick 30-second break. We're going to get right back to the science and the incredible things Parsippany's doing to really show their love and support to the first responders in the healthcare community. We'll be right back.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So, Chris, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we had to take a quick break. Mary Kay, our engineer extraordinaire, was wondering when I would get to it, and you were on a roll. So tell us a little bit more about these incredible signs that Parsippany's putting out there to show their love and support.
Yeah, like I said, sorry for carrying on there. I get on a soapbox once in a while. I apologize. So we decided to make these signs, Parsippany supporting our town, and again, it was just another way to raise some funds, try to buy personal protective equipment for our local, our in-town police and fire and EMS and whoever needs it, because obviously it's a struggle right now. They're out there on calls and going through tons of protective equipment. So first weekend was 250 signs. We put a few routes together and delivered them on a Saturday, and it was really cool because everybody started posting their pictures on the Facebook group, and you saw everybody sign and how proud they were. And so we had requests again, like, hey, can I get a sign? And we only ordered, you know, what was ordered from us originally, and we had a bunch of people looking for signs. So Rich calls me and said, are we doing it again? And, yeah, why not? Let's do it again. And another 175 signs went out yesterday. We had three more groups go out and place them on the lawns. And at the end of that day, we were getting requests while we were delivering them. How do I get a sign? So we're going for round three this week. I'm going to extend the order time a little longer and see what we get and see how many we can get out on the lawns. Right now, like I said, there's 425 signs out amongst our town, supporting our first responders and our frontline workers in Parsippany. And we've purchased some N95 masks for our police and EMS at this point, some hand sanitizer. We've been able to find, there's been a lot of people stepping up and saying, you know, I can get you this or I have these. We've been buying what we can for the police department and the local, you know, EMS and fire as best we can. A little tougher with the fire departments because they're not staying in the houses now. We're all volunteer in town here, so they're not always together. So as far as we've been trying to feed them as well, but it's been a little tougher struggle, but we've been working and trying to source connections to the fire guys too, make sure they're taken care of because they're working really hard out there as well.
Chris, it sounds like you got a great dynamic team. I mean, just really showing the love and support for these incredible heroes on the front lines, the healthcare workers. It's just an incredible thing that I'm hearing this morning, and God bless you and the whole team together there. What's it like to say I'm going to fill a truck and then wow, you fill a truck? Well, what's the feeling?
I'm going to be honest with you. I kind of facilitated because I'm working all day. And like I said, you know, Rich Leitner, Sam Yordice, and Ann Verdetta, I'd like to give everybody credit because there's so many people that are helping. If I miss anybody that's listening, I apologize, but you all mean the world to me. I assure you that. I got there a little bit after it was done, and I walked on a truck because they wanted me to get in a picture, and I'm not a big fan of the picture. You know, it is what it is. We do it for a picture. We do it for the people that it's helping, but I walked on the truck, Todd, and tears came to my eyes, and I got a little bit going now, but tears came to my eyes because it wasn't anything I did. It was the people around this town, the people around me that are all making this happen. And I've been saying to everybody, sometimes people just need a nudge. I've been the guy to give a nudge, and so many people have run with everything we're working on. It's breathtaking, to be honest with you, for lack of a better term at the moment. It's just an amazing sight to see a full truck of food. But knowing as we're delivering it to the food pantry that they need more, and we can't stop there. It's one truck full. It's not enough. We're going to be, as long as it's going on, we have to be there. And even after that, we need to be there for everybody that needs us.
No question. I was so fortunate to have Carolyn Lake on, Nathan Umbriak, Margaret MacBohm, all from the Interfaith Food Pantry in Mars Plains. And this was a number of months ago, but it's great that you guys are reaching out to the food pantries, because we all have to make sure that safety net is there for everyone. We don't want people not to have food, because Lord knows that's the least we can do. But, you know, you talked about your humanity without, I guess, even saying it directly. It brought tears to your eyes, right, in terms of helping others. And I always say to people, we have such incredible, generous people throughout our great state, right here in Morris County particularly, who I hold near and dear to my heart. And you really prove it, right? When you came up with this incredible initiatives with your friends, and obviously shout outs to everybody that's been with you, right, lockstep with everything you're doing. Parsippany supporting our town. I mean, every town in this area is stepping up, and it's a great feeling to be part of it, certainly, because you're seeing firsthand just how people are truly giving and really want to help others in need, and the love and support for the first responders. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to the 200 Club of Morris County. I've been involved a number of years, and a great bunch of people just trying to say, you know, to the first responders at the 200 Club of Morris County, God bless you, whatever we can do for these heroes. And I love the fact that you're showing so much love and support for those individuals who are putting it on the line for us every day, every moment, and we can never lose sight of it. I wanted to bring up, we're going to jump back into this Feed the Frontline and everything you're doing. You talked about your involvement with Parsippany Sports, Parsippany Little League, am I correct?
Yes, sir. I'm the president of Partro East Little League.
Now, what, you know, Parsippany, I understand, has got like over 50,000 residents, and it's a huge, huge town, biggest in Morris County. What's that like being the president of Partro Little League East? What's that like?
It's rewarding, to be honest with you. It's I loved baseball when I was a kid, and I go back to my upbringing and my dad not being around, and sometimes you, when the dad's not there talking to the coach, or even the mom's not there, mom was working all the time, so I didn't have that parental influence to have the conversations with the coach, like, you know, how does Chris need to get better? What's, you know, what can we do to help him? And I loved baseball. I was a fairly decent baseball player, and I felt, and I could be wrong with it, but I felt that I missed out on some opportunities because, you know, mom or dad wasn't in the coach's ear, and you see some certain folks that may not have been the top level player, but dad was there and talking to him. So as I grew up and I look back on it, and my baseball quote unquote career ended, you know, in middle school, but I look back and I thought, you know, I don't want to see kids that happen to kids. You know, I don't want that to be the reason because dad's not talking to the coach or mom's not talking to coach or volunteering or a big part of it. I didn't want that, you know, and it wasn't about my son. It wasn't about my daughter. I'm lucky. My son's a pretty good ball player when he puts his mind to anything. He's pretty good at everything he does. And my daughter as well when she gets something in her head. But I wanted to be the advocate for the kids. And again, one of the other fellows, a couple of the fellows that are helping with this project, Rich Leitner and Jeff Levine, they kind of met me when my son started T-ball. And Rich kind of said, you know, come to a board meeting and, you know, get involved. It'll, you know, we need everybody we can to get involved. And I think probably about 6 years, 5 years later, I'm running for president, and Jeff was the former president. He just kind of came to the end of the road and was like, you know what? It's time for you to take over. And that's my reason for the Little League. We have so many great kids in town, and we have two Little Leagues in town. So we have that inter-town battle, East and West. But, I want to be the advocate for the kids. I want that kid whose dad might not be there or whose parents can't afford to have him play baseball. I want them to have a place. We have a great complex. We have great volunteers, a wonderful concession stand, and it's like a Saturday afternoon or even any afternoon that we spend at Partroy East Little League is, it's an amazing day, you know, even after the games are done and the kids are running around the complex playing, the hearing the kids laughing and the crack of the bat. And, you know, we've got a great guy in the concession stand, Dave Decker, who's been there forever. And he's a sarcastic fellow, but he does it out of love and he busts everybody's chops. And it's just a great place to be. And the people, when they go in that complex or walk in that complex, it's like a different, it's almost a different world where it's, everybody's looking out for each other. and we're one big family. It's just a great feeling, really.
You know, I grew up in Springfield, as I told you a little earlier, and I played Little League, and I was on, thankfully good enough to be on the travel team. And I love baseball. I played a lot of basketball growing up, but we had some great coaches. I always felt, you know, the coaches were really good. They did their best. But, yeah, maybe in the back of your mind you thought there may be a little favoritism. The travel team's not really so much. We just had some incredible coaches. I'm still friends with one of the coaches, Harry Weinerman, from baseball travel way back in the day. So shout out to Harry. I doubt he's listening, but incredible coach and really taught us so much. We had great basketball coaches as well for the travel squads. I remember one year my dad, who worked his fanny off, he worked harder than anybody I ever met in my entire life, and I met a lot of people. One year he came out and tried to be like the assistant coach. He would show up with the three-piece suit, the watch fob, and he would be throwing like baseball practice, you know. I remember it like it's like really like yesterday, because all the other dads would, you know, be there in their jeans, in their t-shirts, and there would be my dad. But I have to say that my dad's credit, which was his humanity, I think one of his gifts, everybody got to play. It didn't matter what the score was. I mean, everybody played ball. And the funny thing was after, and you can relate to this too, on Route 22, the Double Deuce in Union, there was a Dairy Queen, you know. So it didn't matter. All the kids were hyped up when my dad would show up because they knew we were going to Dairy Queen. And I miss those days, you know, I have to say. And I know a lot of people in sports right now are wondering when it's coming back. And I know you're so involved in Parsippany Little League. What's the story with the Little League season? Is there any chance of the kids playing at all this year?
So I will tell you this. Once they open the doors for us, we are playing baseball in Parsippany. The gentleman on the other side of town from the West, Frank Naglia, we've spoke. We don't usually play. Well, we play interleague at certain levels, but we usually are self-contained and play against our own kids. But we've spoke a number of times. When they say we can play, we're going to play. And I said, our kids are going to hit that field. I sent a few emails to the parents. We have a Facebook page as well. We will play ball this year, as long as they tell us we're allowed to, even if we have to go until September. The kids in this town and the families in this town need our complex more than ever now. After this, it's going to be an even better place to be. We're going to be able to celebrate together a little bit and get back to a little bit of normalcy. You know, I'm not sure how vacationing is going to be this year, obviously, with everything going on around the world. And I don't know if everybody's going to be comfortable going on vacation, but they'll have a spot at our Little League complex to quote-unquote vacation and get away from what we've gone through for this time. So you don't have it. We don't have a date. I spoke to the district administrator for Little League, and he doesn't have a date either, but they're working on plans that the second they tell us, we can play, we're going to play ball. And that's going to be a very important thing for this community and all the communities around, in my opinion.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, obviously, once it's safe, I mean, that's first and foremost. But I'm certainly in favor, once everybody gets the green light and we can figure this out together, I'd love to see everybody going out and getting back into the activities. I know sports were real important to you growing up, and certainly important to me and so many of the listeners, as well as the kids nowadays. I mean, certainly that would be really important. I know you're blessed with young kids, and I have young kids, and nothing make me happy to see them getting to hang out with their buddies and friends again and do things that little kids do, you know, since you're only young once. I wanted to jump back into, because I told you I had to ask you a little bit about baseball. I want to get back into this whole incredible movement that you and your friends and colleagues have started in Parsippany to really give back. I went on, you know, the Feed the Frontline page, the GoFundMe page, and I could see how important it was to really thank the first responders and essential personnel workers for what they do, keeping us safe and so we can enjoy our daily lives. Did you have friends or family in law enforcement or first responder community, Chris?
Well, we've got some friends that are nurses. One of our close friends is a nurse in New York City, Yonkers, actually. So she's seen the brunt of it. You know, that's where we're getting hit the most. Few nurses in the family through my brother-in-law, and there's been some first responders. Got to know the police in town a lot better helping them and working with them to try to get, you know, things set up in town. And in my life, it's not been family members per se, but they've been close people that are right now dealing with a lot of stuff. And I'll shout out Dana Enderlin for working every day in the hospital in Yonkers. And you know, she went through, having to stay away from the family and worries about it every day when she comes home. We kind of talk in text messages occasionally. And it's a tough situation for all involved, obviously, but, you know, there are a few close friends and some distant family members that are involved in it right away, right on the front.
Well, the only reason why I bring it up is, I mean, you're spot on with your love and support for the first responders and the healthcare workers. I mentioned the 200 Club in Morris County, and I've been so privileged to serve on the Valor and Meritorious Awards Committee. There are some incredible, heroic people right here in Morris County, and you can never take those folks for granted. I mean, Lord knows we owe them a huge debt of gratitude for what they do. And you talked about the nurses, which are angels on earth, the doctors, the hospital workers. I mean, talk about people that are saving lives, and really, without them, we'd be lost. The whole system would collapse. And the commitment of the families, too. I mean, they're coming home. I mean, you talk about coming home from working at a great local supermarket, and you got to be especially cautious with your beautiful family. But think about if you're working in a hospital. Oh, my God, you got to imagine what goes through their mind about coming back to their family and all their fears and concerns. So I think it's wonderful. I wanted to get back into this Feed the Frontline that you guys have done, and this Parsippany folks. What's your feeling about Parsippany and the humanity of those residents?
Well, I think it's everybody's come together so wonderfully through this. You know, again, supporting our town is happened to turn out to be the perfect name, because we're not just supporting businesses, we're supporting each other. And I think people are seeing each other as heroes amongst a group of people on Facebook, you know, and heroes are easily thrown out of word, but, you know, just somebody donating a can of food or $12 for a sign, or I have some masks that I'll donate, or anything that anybody's doing is a heroic effort, just because they're looking to help somebody else. And the town has, in my opinion, has gotten so much closer, not just through our efforts. It's everybody's efforts. It's not just this group. It's other groups that are banding together to help in town. And it's just, it's a different feel, I think. I hope. And, you know, my biggest thing that I say in the group, in some of my messages that you've answered, is I hope we come out stronger than we went in, and hope we come out closer than we went in, because the easy thing to do when this is over is to go back to what we were, running the rat race, and maybe, I don't want to say not caring about our people around us, but not thinking about them as much as we are right now. And if we can come out of this and say, all right, we went through, you know, a really bad situation, but after it, we learned how to be close to each other, how to love, how to kind of get back to that hometown or one core group feel, one state, one country, one world. We get back to that, and there's good that can come out of this terrible situation.
There's no question about it, Chris. I always love to look for the silver linings in adversity, because we go through adversity in life. I mean, this is certainly beyond the Twilight Zone, since it's actually real. It's not a show. It's people are losing their lives. In New Jersey, over 5,000 great New Jerseyans have already perished as a result of this COVID-19, and thousands of others have been certainly impacted. So it's certainly an incredibly challenging time. But I do agree with you. The unity, the communities coming together. I pray as well that, you know, this carries on. I hate the partisanship going on. We're all Americans. You're not a Republican or a Democrat or independent. We're Americans. And I hope and I do pray that, you know, the unity continues, because I think that's really what it should be about, instead of such pettiness. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I guess sometimes that's just the way it is. Not that it has to be. That's just the way it is sometimes. I wanted to talk to you, you know, Chris. So I know you shared with the listeners, and I appreciate you being so candid about your tough early life and the adversity you went through. Looking back, though, do you think it kind of informed you and made you the person you are today?
100%. 100%. Like I said earlier, I wouldn't change it. I mean, obviously, we all want the white picket fence and the perfect family growing up, but I wouldn't change what has gone on because I've been lucky to get through it. Like I said, people cared about me. They gave me opportunities. I've been lucky to have those opportunities given my way. And it taught me, and I can look back. I know that person that's sitting at home right now or is sick or out of work. I know they're sitting there thinking to themselves, like, how am I going to get through this? You know, I can say, I can tell you, you know, it's never going to be easy. I watch my mom do it every day. You can do it. There's people that are willing to help you. Don't be afraid to ask. And there are people out here that are understand what you're going through and, you know, will not, you know, you don't want to embarrass anybody or there's a lot of people that never ask for anything in their lives that are in need right now. Just don't be afraid to ask and understand that there are people that will help. And, you know, it's always darkest before dawn, I guess they say. So don't ever give up on understanding that you can get through anything and there's people willing to help. So I wouldn't change what I went through for anything because I'm the person I am today because of that. And I'm nobody special. I'm just a guy with an idea. Definitely not any different than thousands, millions of people out there. Just I'm lucky to have a great support group around me and people that are willing to hop right in and run with the ball.
I mean, you're 100% right, Chris, about folks that sometimes are embarrassed to ask for some help or they don't know where to turn. And that's so important for them to know people like you are out there, that there's so many wonderful, beautiful people that will immediately spring into action to help others. And you're a great example of that. So for the listeners, again, if they want to reach out to your incredible cause and help build those funds to give back to the, you know, the incredible, heroic folks doing God's work and also support the local restaurants in the community, how would they reach out to you again?
The easiest way is frontlinemorris.com. We've got it set up where you can request a meal for a first responder, frontline worker. You can volunteer, which if I get a second to talk about that, I will. Or you can donate. It takes you right to the GoFundMe page on one of the three links there. So easiest way, frontlinemorris.com.
So I mentioned about volunteers and people jumping into this and joining your really army of folks really changing the world. If they want to be a volunteer, what's the process?
Right on that same website, there is a tab you click, I want to volunteer, but I'll be very candid about that piece of it. We had many people, probably 50 to 100 people request a volunteer. We talked about it and we're glad that we have the names, we have the information to reach out if needed. We're trying not to use too many volunteers because obviously we don't want to put anybody in harm's way. That doesn't need to be. You know, I'm in the stores every day, so I'm around a lot of people. So by me delivering food and we're doing it the safest way possible, as much social distance as we can, we're following those guidelines and not having contact, just getting the food and getting out. And so we do have a list of volunteers. We ask for volunteers. More so behind the scenes if you can connect to get us, if you know somebody that has personal protective equipment to sell. But we're not having anybody really come out that we don't need to come out. I know there are people that have asked multiple times, I want to help. The best thing we can do helping-wise right now is stay safe and stop the spread of this. But we do want the volunteers in case we run into a problem where we really need somebody, but we're trying not to put anybody in harm's way more than anything else. So everybody that's volunteered, if you haven't got a call, don't worry. It's not nothing against you. It's we want you to be safe, and we will call when we need you for sure.
Well, that's a great thing to have so many people willing to step up and help out, you know, personally and get out there in the field. But I do agree social distancing is so vitally important right now. We can't let our guard down for one second. We got to beat this. We're really in a war, and we got to beat that COVID-19 down. And God willing, get back into our normalcy as soon as possible, as long as it's safe. In terms of making these deliveries, well, what's it like when you roll up and you're going to go and you're going to give food to the heroes right there, these incredible healthcare workers? I mean, God knows the nurses, the doctors. I mean, Lord knows what they're doing. What's it like?
Well, you see, you know, when they come out, you can tell they're happy to have the food. They're very thankful and excited. But you also see the wear on their faces. You can tell, you know, you can only get so excited about somebody bringing you a meal, which they're very thankful for, like I said. But you can tell to be able to come outside for them away from the situation they are on the inside, especially the nurses and the hospital workers, to get away from it for 5 minutes to grab the food, and you can see kind of the breath of fresh air, I guess it would be, literally. And you know what? Guys are giving us some food. We'll have a minute or two to eat, and then we got to run back and get back to what we're doing and saving lives. And there's so much gratitude that's been expressed, you know, letters, text messages, emails, that, you know, it feels great. It feels great to be able to help that little bit. You know, I wish we could take the pain away from them and not have them have to be there for 20 hours straight or in some cases more, days on end with no days off. But it's a great feeling for the time. But when you pull away and you watch them go back into the building, you know they're going back into something so much more than getting a meal from a group of people that are donating. It's so much more to them that they're working with. It's tough.
No question about it, but I'm sure you're lifting their spirits. I see the multitude of Facebook posts from the heroic doctors and nurses in these units at Morristown Medical, other hospitals. I can still see just how thankful they are that the community hears and sees what they're doing. I think that's so important. Before we conclude this wonderful show, Chris, and thank you again so much for coming on. When you go to bed at night after you're supporting your family and then you're out on the front lines and feeding these heroes and supporting local restaurants, when you put your head down on the pillow, you've been doing this over a month now, this God's work in terms of the commitment to the first responders and the healthcare. What's it like?
Honestly, I don't think I've stopped to think about it. I think mostly in my head is, what are we going to do tomorrow? What can we do? I maybe at the end of this, I think the guys and the ladies that are working together here, when we can actually, I don't want to say celebrate, because there's nothing to really celebrate at that point, but we get together and just blow off some steam, maybe it'll hit me a little harder, and I'll be able to say, wow, that's something pretty cool we did. But right now, honestly, it's what are we going to do tomorrow? How can we help some more? Where can I find those Tyvek suits that the police and EMT and firemen need? How can we help them? Who are we feeding tomorrow? That's our thoughts.
Well, listen, Chris, you know, you're spot on again with your thoughts. The battle's not over, but, you know, you should be so proud of yourself and what all these wonderful people in Parsippany are doing to really show their love and support. I've said this multiple times today, but it's love and support. That's what we need right now. We need the community staying together. This unity is incredible. So God bless you, Chris, and everybody else that's been doing God's work. It means the world to hear from people like you. So keep up your amazing work. I'd love to meet you one day. I haven't met you yet, but you're an incredible guy. And it will be a time to celebrate. Trust me, a lot of people want to celebrate. And when we all get through this, I would be honored to meet you in person. So God bless you. And for the listeners, I just want to say this. You know, each week I come on Sunday morning. It's early. I pray everybody's holding up under these difficult times, but I believe we are getting through this. I'm starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but we can't let our guard down. Social distancing is working. We got to listen to the healthcare experts. We got to continue to watch out for each other. If you have a neighbor, friend you haven't heard from in a while, pick up the phone. Do a FaceTime meeting. Everybody's Zooming now. Get up a Zoom meeting together, because we got to stay in touch with each other. Our senior citizens especially, you got to check in on these folks. Make sure they're okay. If they need medicine, do they need food? Chris Mazzarella is a great example. People are hungry. We got to make sure nobody falls through that safety net. I want to say, next coming Sunday, I'm going to be so honored. We have a nurse working right in the front lines. Amy's going to be joining us. I'm going to be thrilled to have her on. But I want to just leave you with these thoughts. We are getting through this. Take care of each other. Love each other. Be so thankful for what you have, and so grateful for these incredible healthcare workers, the first responders, the essential workers. God bless you. I'm really excited to speak with you again next Sunday. Take care of each other.